The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, I'm Zach, and one day I'm going to make movies, but right now I'm young, dumb, and not nearly as good-looking as my co-hosts. So with the help of...
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
I'm Steven.
I'm going to learn what makes a movie great by watching all the classics I have skipped over. So pop the corn and turn your cell phone to silent, because it's time for a new episode of Zach on Film.
In this week's episode of Zach on Film will either be a laugh or a tear as we silently act out our discussion of The Tramp, taking little boy Jackie Coogan as his own in Charlie Chaplin's The Kid.
Yeah, another silent movie. Charlie Chaplin movie is a silent movie.
Yeah, this is great because I had to actually ask you towards the end of the week last week, because I searched The Kid on iTunes and I saw like a black and white movie, which I just should have assumed it was that movie because it's black and white, and I didn't.
Because the other movie was about Bruce Willis and a little kid.
I didn't go into it. I was just looking at movie posters, but like, surely that's not what we're watching. Let me make sure.
Yeah.
But nope. Charlie Chaplin, 1921, was it 53 minutes long?
I watched the Criterion Collection one that's up on iTunes.
Yeah, that's what I watched.
Is that what you guys watched? That's probably the one that exists. The last time that it was kind of remastered was in 71 when they re-recorded the entire soundtrack again under Charlie Chaplin's direction.
Mm-hmm. But that was when he was still alive.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He, came back to the United States in 72 to receive an honorary Academy Award. And that's when he and Jackie, Coogan got back together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about, Zach. Where do you want to start? Why don't you tell us what The Kid is about?
Let's just start with the movie. The Kid is about a tiny little baby that gets left in a fancy car by a mother who does not want to take care of the child by herself.
Yeah.
The car gets stolen. The thieves find the baby, put on the side of the road. Along walks the tramp, Charlie Chaplin. Does not want to take responsibility of the baby. A lot of funny stuff. Doesn't put the baby down a sewer well. Keeps the baby for himself.
Thought about it.
Yep, he did think about it. And then ends up raising this child by himself for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
We jump 5 years into the future, and the tramp and this little tiny baby who he named John.
Mm-hmm. In another great joke, great moment.
Have a little nice business of he goes and breaks some windows. The tramp goes and fixes them. They have a nice life together. They cook pancakes and some stew.
How many tramp movies were there before this, Stephen? Do we know?
Yeah, sure. We could look it up.
This is Chaplin's first feature length.
This is the first feature length film, I think only the second movie that he ever directed.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he directed the crap out of this. I mean, in some cases, I think the overall, we've talked about shooting ratio before.
Yeah, this is huge.
53-1 was the shooting ratio of this. So this is a 53 minute movie. So take 53 times 53, and that's how much raw footage was shot in this flick.
Yeah, and we'll probably get this later, but I was reading about it, and it's like, this movie took 9 months to shoot. 9 months to shoot. They shoot a 2.5 hour movie now in like 60 days.
Well, in fact, during the shooting of The Kid, Chaplin went off and directed and starred in another movie.
Yeah.
Came back in like a week and picked right back up with The Kid.
Yeah. And that gets into a lot more of the story of the film. So anyways, they're living together. Fine. The kid falls ill. Doctor reports that this child is an orphan to the authorities. The authority orphanage people come try to take away the kid, and blah 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 blah. Funny, sad. The mom figures out John is hers, who has now become a famous singer and is giving back to the little poor kids in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. They get reunited. The tramp goes to heaven. He comes back
briefly.
All is well.
Yeah. I so thought he died.
Because Charlie Chaplin died?
I thought in this movie that when the tramp came back home, his boy was gone. He lay down in that door frame. I thought he died. And that was his heaven, because he woke up in heaven. It looks just like the street that he lives on, the crummy little street, but now it's all, you know, covered with yeah, pretty flowers. And then the boy shows up with the wings. And I'm like, okay, this is his heaven. This is his afterlife. And Charlie Chaplin has just killed the character. Oh, man, that was heartbreaking. And then, of course, they flew around and did a lot of slapstick in heaven. And then it turns out it was just a dream, a horrible dream. This may be the first film to use a dream sequence.
No.
Yeah, definitely. That's a fact that I just made up.
Well, I'll agree with you there. So going back to where does this fall? Chaplin has 72 movies that he directed.
Good Lord.
This one fell in the latter fifth. So he directed a lot of movies before this one. This was his first feature length one.
The rest of them were like
shorts,
tiny little things smashed up and shown all together on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Well, what it's we're doing
a one reeler. This is like a, what is this? A three reeler, I think.
I think each reel was
six reeler. Okay. So each reel is 10 minutes long, roughly an hour. So there you go.
Yeah.
He was pumping. So this is in the last fifth of movies he did.
Yes.
And he did 70-something.
So as a director.
Yeah, as a director.
72 movies.
So he was pumping out stuff like crazy for, I mean.
Well, I mean, if you're doing 10 minutes.
We watched.
Modern Times. That came out after
this. No. Yeah, we did watch that. But we watched a crazy racist Civil War movie.
Right.
Birth of a Nation.
What was it?
Birth of a Nation.
Birth of a Nation. That was. What, early 19?
Like 1919, something like that.
Yeah. And we're talking, like, film hasn't been around that long in 1920.
No.
Not that long. Like, less time from the first Star Wars to now is how long film has been out, and he's pumping out that
his
much.
His first movie is a short, uncredited, Kid Otto races at Venice. Was him as a writer, and that was in 1914. As a director, his first movie was 20 Minutes of Love in 1914. His first acting was Making a Living, where he played a swindler in 1914. So between 1914 and 1921, he was busy.
Wow.
Yeah, the tramp character apparently started in Kid Otto Races at Venice in 14. So this is 7 years into the whole tramp oeuvre, if you will.
Well, I mean, this was, you know, pretty controversial. A lot of people said, oh, don't do this movie. Don't do this movie with the tramp, because people know the tramp as, you know, funny and all this kind of stuff. Happy-go-lucky. And he gets into the little slapstick stuff. And now you're wanting to do something that's like super serious and looks at poverty and looks at, you know, unwed mothers and makes commentary on society.
Which was huge. I mean, that's the first thing that I thought. I was like, here's an unwed mother in a very sympathetic light.
Right.
And it was very surprising to me, because I kind of get the feeling that if this movie was done today, she wouldn't have had such a sympathetic light on her.
No.
Which is kind of amazing when you think about this, again, being 1921.
Well, it was her cross to bear.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and in 19... Ooh, metaphor. In 1921, though, you also think about when they're taking the kid away... You have to think about it. They're taking him away to an orphanage, which, you know, for all intents and purposes, is like a work farm for babies.
Yep.
That's terrifying. And that whole sequence, that beautiful sequence where the tramp is running across the rooftops to catch the truck to get his boy. I'm like, this is 1921 action flick.
This is the Bourne Identity.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
exactly. This is the Bourne Identity, and he's trying to save his boy. I just it's heartbreaking.
Well,
too.
And I think anybody as a parent, I think it really touches you when, you know, you're trying to keep your kid. And granted, it's not his kid. It's just a note that says, please take care of this kid.
Orphan boy.
and this kid's being taken away from you, and Jackie Coogan's out there just bawling his head off, saying, "My daddy, my daddy, please, I want my daddy." And Charlie Chaplin cannot do anything about it, and it's driven off, and it's just like, oh my God, this is, I would do the same thing.
They beat him and held him down to take away his child.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Apparently, supposedly, Jackie Coogan's real father told him that if he couldn't cry in the movie, that Jackie Coogan would end up in a real workhouse orphanage. Well, that's how they got the little boy.
Which makes sense, because you see that kid and that kid is crying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see Jackie Coogan and he's not acting. Like,
now, Charlie Chaplin just, he went to, I think, an audition or went to go do something. And Coogan's mother was there, and she had brought Jackie along to just hang out. He was 4 years old, mm-hmm. didn't have any place to go. And he could mimic everything that Charlie Chaplin did. And Chaplin was like, this is my kid.
Right.
And so we get this idea of a kid co-star in this movie. And this movie rocketed him to stardom. I mean, he was the toast of the town, princes of India and queens of Europe all wanted to meet him. And he was super well known. Was he also what into the Little Rascals? Just a super well known kid actor until about the age of 13.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever happens, puberty or something happens. But then he just kind of drops out of everything. Turns out his parents were screwing around with his money. And when he got out of acting at the age of 13, he was penniless.
Broke.
And it wasn't until the 1970s when he started to come around, when he was, he played Perry White.
Uncle Fester.
Oh, Uncle Fester? No.
Yeah. Jackie Coogan grew up to be Uncle Fester.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. But one of the things that came about of this was this idea of Coogan's Law. He helped change these things that parents don't have complete control over the finances of kid actors, and that the money has to be gone into something that will benefit the child later in life when they turn 21. So that's the thing that that you want to keep in mind out of all this tragedy.
You know, it's weird. I did some minor reading about Coogan's Law.
Yeah.
And it's only required in like 3 or 4 states. Like California, New York,
because those are the
Louisiana, I think like Nevada or New Mexico or something. Like those are the only states, that require the Coogan Law.
Because those are more than likely the states where you're going to find unions.
Yeah,
number one, and where SAG-AFTRA would have any kind of reach. Because Kansas is a right to work state, so it wouldn't apply here. But California and New York are unionized states that have very specific child labor laws when it comes to movies. But then again, you don't see a lot of movies being done here in Kansas.
Well, no. Furthermore, did Coogan's Law eventually mutate into something else?
It's still called Coogan's Law. It's been overhauled because they said there were like weird loopholes and crap in it when it first came out.
So,
and I think it just got recently updated.
So is it just that Coogan's Law only applied to 4 states, but then like the revamped version has been taken?
As of currently, today. It's only those states.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea. Kind of a good one, because good Lord.
Yeah, but kind of terrible context to put this movie in. I mean, he's this childless, poor little abandoned boy who is actually played by some kid who's actually going to end up being a poor abandoned boy.
Coogan does an excellent performance here. Just fantastic.
He is a super talented kid. What I really enjoy about this is the tramp kind of has a life when the baby shows up, and we have the cute little set piece where he makes the little thing and he hangs the boy up and he's able to drink out of the teapot because he doesn't have a bottle. The cleverness in the set pieces and the way this whole thing is constructed, you know, the stairs up to the teeny tiny attic apartment, the way the whole thing is put together is just amazing. I don't think of 1921 is having really clever props and set pieces like this. And this is really fascinating to watch the way the film is constructed.
Well, but definitely, you know, by the time we get to modern times, this has been taken to the extreme, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was just going back into the specifics of Coogan's Law. It requires that a child actor's employer set aside 15% of the earnings to be put into a trust called the Coogan account until, and also put into things like schooling, work hours, and time off in that as well. Beyond Coogan's great performance here, Charlie Chaplin also brings in a fantastic performance as well. Yeah. A couple of things, and we're kind of see this when we get to Citizen Kane towards the end. There's a lot of this movie that is just like ripped right out of Charlie Chaplin's life. Essentially, he grew up poor in London, destitute, basically doing kind of the same things that he and his son were doing in this movie, although it was him and his mother. He was actually taken away from his mother at one point, so that's very poignant in that scene at the end. Just a few days before shooting of this movie began, Charlie Chaplin actually lost his son. His son died. The son had some birth defects and died just a few days after birth. But from the accounts, it did affect Chaplin quite a bit as he went into this movie.
Was really interesting. I mean, it really ties back into, I mean, the death and the tragedy aspect. This is that he was like having a creative block
right
before the death of his son, his infant son. And then, was it like 2 weeks later or something, wrote this and they started going at it because I guess that unlocked something inside of him.
And I don't know the whole story, but apparently also at the same time, he and his wife, we married young and they just didn't get along. They started going through a divorce and they got really scared that she was going to try to.
It's really interesting.
Nap put this film as in part of the assets of the divorce. And so like in the middle of the night, they smuggled the film out of the state of California and went to go edit it in Utah. And then also in New York.
Yeah.
At an undisclosed.
So awesome.
It's just really crazy. But yeah, not only did it take a long time to shoot, but it also took a long time to edit because they were shipping it around, trying to keep it out of the court system to be wrangled up in this divorce case. Chaplin later went on to marry the flirty angel girl who was in the Heaven sequence.
Oh, no way.
Did he?
That's funny.
That's funny.
Yeah. Or somewhat telling. I don't know.
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, maybe.
So I think really the thing to get out of this movie beyond just, you know, it's Charlie Chaplin and Coogan's Law and those kind of things, but that you can take personal tragedy, whatever it is, and tell it and turn it into a compelling story.
Sure. Well, I mean, he is combining a lot of the old adage of do what you know, little stuff from childhood, bring in some recent stuff. Film for a billion hours.
Well, and for creative types, creating can be therapeutic, right? I mean, the Divine Comedy was written because somebody dumped Dante,
right?
And it's a Divine Comedy. So you know, this is a sort of thing where like you can work through some stuff through your work, especially if you're an artist. I mean that. And if you have, you know, like Chaplin did, this was pretty much free reign to do whatever he wanted.
Yeah. I can't remember if this movie came out. Maybe Zach can look it up. I don't remember if this movie came out as part of the United Artists thing, because at one point, Charlie Chaplin got fed up with the studio system or working for the studios. And he and, now I forgot.
Mary Pickford.
Mary Pickford and the swashbuckler guy.
Errol Flynn.
All teamed up to form United Artists.
And Douglas Fairbanks.
Douglas Fairbanks is who I'm thinking.
Not Errol Flynn. And
E.W.
Griffith.
Griffith.
So.
Yeah.
That was in 1919, so yeah.
Yeah, so it would have been just before this movie came out. So, you know, there would have been some certainly some people taking interest in this film and the success of this film and whether it would come to light or not. Certainly things that could go wrong for United Artists in the early years would be big for the studio system. So it was great that this movie, when it came out, was a huge success.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Incredible. Especially because how much of the studio didn't want it to happen.
Yeah.
Or like thought it would be a horrible, horrible thing, but it's so important of not just straight comedy, but mixing the elements of tragedy and comedy
mm-hmm.
to bring out greater aspects of both.
Mm-hmm. So what did you pick up from this movie?
Early wire work.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was awesome. And made me like, wait, where are the wires? And then you realize once you finally like start looking like closer, like they're on the tips of the wings, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was really interesting. Bowlers.
Those were
sweaters.
Awesome.
My favorite part is when like a dog flies in, like this little puppy flies in and they like pet it and then flies back out.
Yeah. For no reason at all. Yeah.
Well, I think it's also
such a great funny moment.
It's also really kind of interesting, even though the exterior stuff was all shot down on an area of Los Angeles before it turned into like they rethemed it into like a Mexican tourist trap area.
Mm-hmm.
Before that time, that's where they kind of had this London-esque kind of looking landscape. But there are times when you're looking at some of these sets and you're like, oh yeah, you can tell that the skylight is open and the sunlight's just pouring in to light these scenes. And
yeah,
if you go, you know, 5 feet one way, you'd probably run into another set of another movie being filmed.
There was interesting. I was looking up stuff for this movie and someone has a really detailed thing of like plotting out all the places they were filming this in like LA and like tells you like lines up old like pictures of presidents while like sets and stuff and shows you like, well, this has been the original Chinatown in like 1980 until they destroyed it and then put like the Pacific Railroad or something. It is really
interesting.
Yeah, it was really cool. This film was really interesting. One thing that was really strange to me, especially learning that you have a shooting ratio of 53-1, so it's just like film after just unheard of film to go through this, and I'm gonna probably just chalk this up to it was 1921, and now I'm watching in 2014 on a digital conversion that's lasted nearly a century. There's like weird jump cuts in parts of it. But they weren't as weird as some jump cuts that we've seen either in old films or like 30s and 40s films where they just didn't get their editing right on the action or something.
Yeah. It's like they were intentional jump cuts.
It felt like, when you watch like YouTube vloggers chop up, interviews himself.
Their conversation,
It felt natural, except that's not generally what you do in film.
Well,
it was really interesting.
I mean, I think you covered this. You know, people had been making films like as studios and professionally, people had been making films for
7 years.
Not even 20 years, right?
Yeah.
So back then, they hadn't established the language that a jump cut doesn't work.
Uh-huh.
And like very early on, like there's a shot when they're shooting the sky and there's like this cloud moving through and then there's a jump cut and then the scene ends. And like, again, to our modern sensibilities, I'm like, why didn't you just cut at the cut? You know, why did you throw in a half a second of more cloud that is a terrible jump cut?
Mm-hmm.
It's just because back then people were used to jump cuts or there just wasn't anything saying that they were bad.
So this was 53 minutes, which is an odd length. It should have probably run right at 60 minutes. My guess is that there's some footage that has been lost over time because one of the sad things that happens to film, especially films from the 1920s shot on the nitrates, is that they deteriorate rapidly. And just being exposed to the air can cause them to catch fire. I mean, you hear stories of going into the old archives and opening up some of these old film canisters, and just the sudden exposure of oxygen causes them to combust and ignite.
And not at all because the artist sold their soul to the devil.
Well, that could be it too.
They're trying to kill
so I'm
Hitler
wondering if in some
plot.
Of these cases, because there was one part where in one shot there's just a big question mark in the version that I watched. Did you see that?
Yeah,
you remember
it's like
all
in one
of a sudden
the windows.
It's like one shot. There's just a big question mark filling the entire frame, and it's like there's something that's missing there in that sequence. So I'm wondering if part of the rebuilding of this and restructuring it is trying to gather together the available film that they had, and that could have caused some of these.
Yeah, that question mark. I was like, okay, so they're going to do something with that question mark, and I was like, nope.
Yeah, I think it was just missing footage or something.
I have no idea.
Yeah,
and going back to you, like they haven't really established a film language yet. They don't use title cards very often in this, but
Yeah.
There's some instances when they do is you have a shot and then you get two frames of the next shot, then title card, and then you go back to that two frames. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you do that?
Right.
They're physically cutting film, man.
I know. But
that may be the reason why that jump cut is there too. He need to have the film in order to transition into that next piece of film. I don't know.
Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah. And the other thing is you know, here's your Charlie Chaplin is like, I want this scene. Is like, this scene seems too short, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, so I'm just going to re-add this footage, like tack on this footage at the end, and then that will give it the gravity at once. And again, to us, it just looks like such a horrible cheat.
Yeah.
But or maybe then, it was like, could have been, oh, geez, guys, it's my wife's lawyers. Quick, pack up. Let's go. And they rush off to New York. And then it's like, where were we? I don't know. Let's just continue on where we left off.
I doubt that. Again, with a 53-1 ratio, yeah. I doubt he would have been like, meh, just throw in whatever.
He probably was under a lot of pressure. I would like to go back and watch that Chaplin movie with Robert Downey Jr. Because somewhere in there, this is the kid is part of that story.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I do know that from this, I learned, one, watch the movie, that Chaplin is one of the funniest people to have ever lived.
Oh, yeah.
He's just unreal. Watching it reminded me of, oh, hold on. I had names pulled up. It was like his facial reactions.
Oh, my
like,
God.
Oh, you can see those all over the place with people now. Martin Short came to mind.
Yeah.
And then, oh, crap. I forgot his name. I just had it up. Oh, nope. Not him.
What is he in?
Corky Romano.
Oh, Chris Kattan?
Yeah, Chris Kattan.
Reminded me of him, too. I don't know why. But that one really came. But, yeah. His stuff.
I can definitely see that.
So funny.
Maybe we talked about this. Have you watched The Artist?
Yeah.
Okay.
We watched it for this. For the.
We watched it for this.
The podcast.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So yeah, really good stuff.
Again, shooting locations for this movie, those lined up. There's a thing they shot, and this was something that was also referenced in The Artist.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Excellent.
Second thing that I really picked up from this, just from reading about this, is that Charlie Chaplin is really interesting, and holy crap, I just gotta read more about this dude.
Yeah, there is a definitive Chaplin biography.
Yeah,
but I mean, to see a more salacious, if you don't want to sit down and read 5,000 pages, there is that Robert Downey Jr. movie called Chaplin that is okay. That you might want to go check out. It's got a really cool opening sequence in that starts out in black and white. And Chaplin is sitting down and he's taking off his makeup maybe it's supposed to be filmed in reverse of Chaplin putting on his makeup. But as he's taking it off, the movie goes from black and white to color as he's taking off all the face paint and everything. So
Interesting.
A really cool opening sequence. I don't remember much else beyond that, except I think there was a issue with Fatty Arbuckle in that movie, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were some issues with Fatty Arbuckle.
Yeah, there was. So we were talking earlier that we didn't want this podcast to be longer than the actual film.
Did we do it?
No, not quite.
Okay, good.
We're about halfway there, though. So what you learn? Oh, you already talked about what you learned.
Yep.
Your wife watched this with you?
She watched most of it with me. I think she might have actually enjoyed this one. Actually, oh, no, great anecdote. I said, hey, I got to watch a movie tonight for the podcast. She's like, what do you got to watch? I'm like, oh, I'm watching The Kid.
She's like, oh, I love Bruce Willis.
I said, it's a Charlie Chaplin movie. She said, oh, so it's silent. I go, oh my God, you know that. I love you so much. I was
at
so proud.
They were silent.
I was
films.
So proud. She just knew it.
Good.
That was great.
And so she sat down and watched it with you.
Yeah, she watched most of it with me. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
All right, Zach, wrap us up.
Is that it? Yep. Okay, that's it for this episode of Zach on Film. Head over to MajorSpoilers.com and find this podcast posting page and give any of your thoughts on our discussion of The Kid or any of your own thoughts after watching this Charlie Chaplin joint. Click on the Amazon.com link while you're there at MajorSpoilers.com. Do all your shopping. Maybe buy a couple Chaplin movies or buy a Blu-ray player or anything else. Holidays are coming up. Do all your shopping Amazon. It's not going to cost you any extra. But a little bit will come back to Major Spoilers and help keep this boat afloat. So that's it for this week. Next week, we'll be talking Ben-Hur as we wind down Zach on Film.